The Jan Price Show, all about movies.
You're listening to The Jan Price Show, all about movies, and today my guest is Canadian Academy Award nominated screenwriter Dan Gordon, and we're going to talk about this beautiful movie that he wrote called Irina's Vow. Welcome to the show, Dan.
Thank you. Good to be with you. Just a slight correction, Canadian, American, Israeli, so I'm a triple threat here.
Triple threat. Well, that's what makes some sense in how you wrote the script and why how it came to you. So I want to do a deep dive right away. I know you wrote a play about Irina and then it translated into this film. But before we get really started in deeping into a deep dive about this movie, why don't you tell the audience what this film is all about so they will know what we're talking about?
It is a true story. It's the story of Irina Gut Updike, who at the time was Irina Gut, that was her maiden name, who in World War II was a 20-year-old, blonde-haired, blue-eyed, beautiful Catholic girl from a good family, who became an impressed worker working for the Germans. She was a forced laborer. She wound up as the housekeeper for a German major who was up in years. He was in his mid-60s. And she hid 12 Jews in the basement of the German major without his knowledge for almost a year. A baby was conceived down there. And when the major found out the secret, she was forced to become his mistress in order to save them, and she saved them all. And when we premiered the play on Broadway, on opening night on Broadway, after all the cast had taken its vows and I had taken my vow, that baby who was conceived in the basement in the German major's house, who was by that time in his mid-60s, walked out onto stage to thunderous applause, and it was one of the greatest moments of my professional life.
Amazing. And did you know he was going to be there? Was that part of...
Yeah, we flew him in from Europe.
How amazing. I'm losing our view here, so I'm so sorry. How was that? Was Irina there for that?
No, Irina had passed on, unfortunately. She, at the end of her life, she spent the end of her life going to schools, primarily inner city schools, high schools, telling about the Holocaust. She had heard a Holocaust denier, and she had been quiet about her experiences, like many, many people from World War II, from the Holocaust. She never spoke about them. Her daughter never knew any of this story at all. And the Holocaust denier who happened to be calling randomly was a student who said, you know, I'm just taking a survey. How many people believe this hoax actually happened? Because it didn't. And she obviously said, let me set you straight on that, young man. And she said, this is insane that people think that this was a lie and it didn't happen. I was there. I saw what was done. And her husband said, Irene, you're preaching to the choir. Tell people who don't know. And so she began speaking at schools. And her big fear at the end of her life was, who will tell the story after I'm gone? And I said, Irene, you will. And I had gotten the life story rights because I wanted to do a movie. I almost got it made. It fell through. The only time in my career I ever bought back a screenplay from a studio was this one. I said, I'll pay you 100 cents on the dollar. I want it back.
Wow.
It was Alliance Atlantis. To their credit, they sold it to me, and I knew it would be easier to get a playoff, or at least I thought it would, than a movie. And that's because I didn't know a lot about theater. So I wrote the play, and we were workshopping it at a small college in New England as Irina was dying in the hospital. And on the first performance ever of the play, I called her daughter, who was at her mother's bedside. I said, put the phone up to your mom's ear. And I said, Irene, do you hear that applause for you? And she passed on the next day.
Wow. That's amazing. What a wonderful story. I just got goosebumps.
So she didn't get to see the play performed on stage. She knew she had read it. She knew it was going to be performed. And it took about another 4 years, I think, 4 or 5 years from that first workshop performance till we opened off Broadway. And then we transferred to the Walter Kerr Theater on Broadway. I think it was in 2009, something like that.
Who played? Go ahead. Go ahead, Dan.
Pardon me?
Go ahead. Continue. didn't you?
It just an incredible evening, because literally the who's who of Broadway turned out for that opening. I mean, Ellen Burstyn, Elaine Stritch, you name it, they were there. And seated in the row directly in front of me was Neil Simon. And he was on his feet, giving, as was the entire audience, giving a standing ovation. I couldn't resist. And I said, "Mr. Simon, my name is Dan Gordon. I said, I just want you to know how much your presence here and your appreciation of the play means to me." And he said, "It's wonderful. I get to do the sequel." I said, you're on." And he said, "Actually, no, I don't know how to write that well." And that was the nicest thing that was ever said to me.
Wow. Who played Irina on Broadway?
What we did on Broadway, we really found the only actress, I think, who could have done it, the only Broadway actress who could have done it, was Tova Feldsha. And the idea was that one actress would play older Irene, who was speaking to a group of high school students, and that as she began to tell her story, she would walk down a few steps of the risers onto downstage, and as she walked, she would transition into young Irene, and she would play young Irene until the end of play, when she would once again become the older woman. I don't know another actress who could have done it the way Tova did. She pulled it off magnificently.
She's a wonderful actress. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, wow. So then what made you decide to finally make this a movie?
It began life as a movie. I wanted it to be a movie.
Right. I know that.
Put it into development with Alliance Atlantis back in the 90s. And it went through various incarnations with all kinds of different possibilities and combinations. And it always fell through. The hardest kind of a movie to get made is a Holocaust movie. I mean, I have 20 produced films to my resume, and I have about 200 and some odd hours of television. Nothing's harder to get made than a Holocaust.
Interesting. Why do you think that is?
Nobody wants to see him.
Now, Schindler's List, how long did it take Steven Spielberg? It took him a long time to get that movie made, correct?
The producer of that film actually wanted to produce Irena's Vow. I'm just blanking on his name right now. He's a lovely older gentleman. It took him 30 years.
I was going to say, I remember it took a long time.
It came to Spielberg, I believe, 10 or 15 years earlier through Sid Sheinberg, who was the head of productions at Universal. And Sid said, "This is for you. You should do it." And he said no. And he passed on it. He didn't feel he was mature enough to make it. He waited another, whatever it was, 10 or 15 years, and I think very reluctantly made it. I think he was terrified of it, but, you know, obviously it's the movie that he's proudest of.
Oh, it's a brilliant movie. I love that movie. Yeah. Every time I watch it, I'm always sobbing. Yeah, it's a brilliant movie. It truly is.
It's hard to watch, and people want to go to the movies to escape and feel good, and they're important movies, but they're hard to watch, and they're hard to draw an audience to.
I think even more after the pandemic. During the pandemic, people kept saying, "I need something that makes me happy, and I want to, I want to be cheery." And that conversation is still going on. I hear it a lot. But then there are important movies, as you say, and I agree. Irena's Vow is one of those very important films that I think definitely needs to be seen more than ever.
And the odd thing is that when people see it, they don't leave the audience. They don't leave the theater depressed.
No.
Very uplifted.
Exactly.
And very grateful that they saw the movie. It's not like, "Oh God, I had to sit through this thing." It was like eating broccoli and okay.
Right.
They used to call those movies spinach movies. For you, but you don't want to do it. This is not that kind of movie. People leave feeling very uplifted.
Exactly. I love it because for exactly that reason. You know, there's another movie out right now too called One Life with Anthony Hopkins, and that's about Nicholas Winton, who saved hundreds of Jewish children from Czechoslovakia, and he kept his story secret too. He didn't really talk about it until 50 years later, and it's also the same kind of story. You know, that it's uplifting, that people were working during. First of all, let me just tell you, I love anything to do with World War II and anything to do, you know, with obviously this topic, and that there were so many unsung heroes during World War II that were doing this kind of right word, you know, we just felt compelled and knew that they had to do this, even though they were putting their lives in peril by doing it. And certainly Irena, I mean, amazing 19-year-old old woman who, for some reason, I mean, you know, she saw something horrific and made a vow and then decided, you know, that she was going to do whatever she could. And she was, I mean, again, you know her story personally, but there were so many things in this film that, you know, she chose to do and what she said and whether those were actually the things she did or said. Obviously, you know, for 2 years she had hid, what, 12? Was it 12?
12.
And did it in, you know, this officer of the, you know, the Third Reich. I mean, it just is, it blows your mind that she had enough chutzpah herself to do that, knowing what could happen to everyone. And it's just an amazing story. It's very uplifting, and it does only take one person to make a difference. And this movie is more important now than ever, I believe. I really do. I think we need to see this. People need to see this. It's just beautifully done and beautifully acted. And how did you get introduced to Irena to begin with?
So at that time, I lived in Los Angeles, and I was driving home one evening on a Sunday from a dinner meeting, which I almost never took. I took being a father to my children extraordinarily seriously, and I was always home for dinner. I never did overtime when I, you know, I actually passed on a directing career, because when you direct a feature, you lose a year of your life. And my kids were small, and I thought, do I want to lose a year of their lives, which I can never get back? And the answer was no, and I never regretted that. That was a smart decision. I have the relationship I have today with my kids because of it. At any rate, on that particular evening, my kids had activities. They were off doing other things. They weren't going to be home. And my wife at that time had something. And I thought, well, I can eat dinner at home, or I can take this dinner meeting with whoever it was on whatever project that never panned out. And so I took a dinner meeting. And as I was driving home, there used to be a show called Religion on the Line with Dennis Prager. And I never listened to that show. I simply was channel surfing on the radio. And I happened on the show, and he usually had clergymen on there. But this time he had Irene, because Irene operated out of this very, very, very pure faith, which wasn't dogmatic, but it was the purest faith I've ever run into. And she was telling her story. And Irene was a spectacularly good storyteller. She was a very vivacious woman. She had this lilting accent that almost sounded like Zsa Zsa Gabor. She had a spectacular sense of humor. I mean, she was a hoot to be with. And I was completely captivated. And when I pulled into the drive, I stayed there for another 2 hours listening to the radio just to hear her story.
Wow.
And then the next day, I called the radio station and I said, look, my name is Dan Gordon. I'm a screenwriter. I'm not a psychopath. You can look me up. I've got credits. I'm not a stalker and all that stuff. And I said, could you please pass my phone number along to Mrs. Updike and tell her I'm interested in doing her story as a motion picture? And about 3 or 4 hours later, I got a call, and there was this delightful voice on the other end that said, hello, Khanya. This is Irene. And that began the love affair between Irene and myself. She became like a second mother to me. I wound up taking her to these schools where she spoke. Anytime I had a premiere of a movie or a play opening or an awards dinner, I would take her along, and she'd be my date, or she would come with me and my then girlfriend. And literally, she became like a second mother to me.
Wow.
So it was very much of a, if you believe in those things, which I certainly do, I was divinely guided to that radio station on that night to hear that story from that woman.
Yes, you were. Yes, you were. How many... Go ahead, Dan. Go ahead.
I would just say the movie is the result of that.
How many years ago... How long ago did this happen? Did this event happen?
I think it must have been 1995, maybe, somewhere around there.
So quite a while.
1995.
So her daughter has...
And Irene and I, oddly enough, shared the same birthday. We both were born on May 5th.
Oh, you're kidding. My mother's May 10th.
No.
So there you go. Good old Taurus.
Yeah.
What a wonderful story that, you know, again, serendipity, divinely guided, you know, who knows? I always look at life and you go, you start to put the pieces together. You go, oh, that happened for this reason. And now I get that why I did that. And da, da, da. Why you took that dinner meeting that night.
Yeah.
That you normally would never have taken. And where it led you into this beautiful, beautiful story. Her daughter has gotten to see this movie. And what did her daughter think of the film?
I think she loves the film. I mean, I know Jeannie, and Jeannie was at every night of the play. Jeannie saw the film at the opening at the Toronto Film Festival. I was out of the country at the time, so I didn't get to go to the opening of the film. So I haven't really seen Jeannie since then, but from everything I've heard, that she was very, very happy.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, it's beautifully acted. Sophie Nalisse, is that Nalisse?
Yeah,
is just beautiful in this film. The camera just stays on her face, and her eyes tell you everything you need to know. And it's just beautiful. It's beautifully acted by her. Just truly, I was mesmerized by her and her performance, and then Doug Ray Scott. Oh my God, you feel so sympathetic towards him, you know, who knew, right? That you would have some sympathy for this Nazi officer.
Yeah. He's a complex character because on the one hand, he's an absolute monster.
Yes.
You know, he's a rapist. He's just a flat out rapist. But when you write, none of your characters are villains. You have to write them from their point of view. And so one has whatever insights one has into this person. And the odd, many people think, oh my goodness, that's so wonderful. I think it's kind of horrible, but it is what happened. So it is what it is. When the war ended and he came back to Germany, there were two rumors that followed him. One was that he had a Polish mistress, which was true. Irene was his mistress. The other rumor was he had hidden Jews. Well, his wife threw him out. Whether it was because he had an affair or whether it was because she was a true believer and hiding Jews was verboten, or both, I don't know, and I don't know that anyone knows. But he basically was thrown out, and he was an old man, and he was destitute. Ida and Laser Haller, who were the parents of the boy who was conceived in that basement, ran into him. Now, to show you how wonderful Irene was, Irene never told the Jews in the basement the price that she had to pay in order to save them. Never did. She never mentioned that. Because she didn't want them to feel guilty. So she said, the major's a good man and he's decided to keep our secret. So as far as they were concerned, he was a hero. They didn't realize he was literally raping her every night. So when the Hollers met the major after the war, Rugemer, and he was destitute, they took him in and supported him for the rest of his life in gratitude. Now, he never said to them, oh, I'm not such a good guy. After all, I was forcing this young woman to sleep with me, and he was 40 years younger than me. He said, oh, yes, it was the only thing I could do. Well, Roman Haller grew up thinking of him as his grandfather.
Hmm.
And there's something. There are people who say, oh, that's such a beautiful story. I feel revulsion at the story. That's because perhaps I'm not as evolved a human being as I ought to be. But that is the story nonetheless. That is what happened. And maybe God has plans. Not maybe God has plans that I understand. God has lots of plans I don't understand. And that's why he's God and I'm not. But, you know, but that is part of the story.
But how I look at it, Dan, when, you know, and it is interesting. It was an interesting epilogue to the story, obviously, is about forgiveness. You know, mm-hmm. Everything, you know, here we are in the season of forgiveness. And that, you know, forgive them for they know not what they do is so important. And in life for all of us. The lessons. Yeah. If we don't forgive someone, it's not affecting them, it's affecting us. It's affecting our heart, our bodies, our souls. It's not affecting them. And so even though we don't necessarily have to come in person and tell them we forgive them, we can forgive them in our hearts. And so he grew up not knowing what this man actually had done. So,
exactly. And he grew up loving him as a grandfather. And he probably was a doting grandfather. He was probably very grateful to these people because he was destitute. Here's a little child who looked up to him. I mean, children melt your heart. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, within this rapist, is there a good guy somewhere? Yeah. Within Bill Cosby, is there a good guy somewhere? Yeah. Within Harvey Weinstein, is there a good guy somewhere? I don't know. That could be stretching it, but maybe.
There's dark and light. Go ahead.
It's not my place to say.
Right, right. And there's dark and light in all of us. You know, yeah. There's always, you always have to have, you know, that's just the way it is. It's the opposites. You know, we have night and we have daylight. And so there are good parts of us, and sometimes there's parts of us that we don't really like that much, you know. And that was the time and the era, you know. A lot of those men who, I don't know. I mean, you know, they were all drafted into this army.
Yeah.
Who knew it? Would you portray him, though, in a beautiful way? I will say, I mean, you have a great, and the way that Doug Ray Scott plays him, you have a great deal of sympathy. You know, you wonder if the line that he said, now, you wrote it, was it true or not, that he was grateful, he said, for the Jews.
It's a very ironic line.
Yes.
I meant it to be a very ironic line. I meant it to be what he says after he has slept with her. He says, shall I tell you something funny? I thank God every night for your Jews, because without them I would never have had this time with you.
Yes.
Now, you can take that a number of ways. I would have put a bullet through his brain, but that's me. But I, from his point of view, in writing that character, I know he was saying what he truly felt. To me, what he felt was disgusting, but my job as a writer is to be inside that character and give you his point of view, not mine. But he wasn't, there were two sort of different characters there. Rokita was a dyed-in-the-wool Nazi.
Oh, yes.
He was a complete, true-believing, sadistic, absolute monster.
Right.
And I mean, a horrific man. Rugemeier was an old man who was a factory manager, and he was in the Wehrmacht, not the SS. And as Irene said, you know, I asked Irene, I said, what are your feelings today about this whole thing? And of course, many years had passed, and Irene just looked at me and she said, he was an old man. And that's all she said.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, she needed to say.
You know, our time has run out, unfortunately. I could sit and talk to you a lot longer about this beautiful movie. Do you know where people can see Irina's Vow?
It's nationwide. It's going to be, I think, in 850 theaters nationwide. It is a Fathom event. So it's April 15th and April 16th. In addition, I just now published the book, the novel, Irina's Vow, which is much more complete. You know, you only have 2 hours in a movie, so
right.
You can do an awful lot more in a book.
Wow, I look forward to reading the book, too.
My favorite is the book.
Yeah, I look forward to reading the book, for sure. I would love to know more, because, you know, you're right. I would love there were more details that you want to learn about. Dan, thank you so much. It's a beautifully written movie, and everybody, really, you will be uplifted and by this amazing story, Irina's Vow, and just this amazing woman who lived on our planet, and we're blessed that she did, and the people that she helped. So thank you. It was a blessing to have you on my show too, Dan.
Men and women, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
You're very welcome. My pleasure. I look forward to having you back with your next screenplay.
Please. Thank you.
You're welcome. To all my wonderful loyal listeners, your love of film allows me to do what I do. If you want to support me, the best way to do that is to hit the subscribe button on the iHeart Podcast Network, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcast. And of course, on YouTube. Subscribing matters. If you are feeling really compelled, I want to hear from you. Have a burning question, comment, or review? Drop me an email at thejampriceshow.com. Thank you for listening.
The Jan Price Show, all about movies.